I'm Charlotte Armitage, and this is Objects. On this episode, I'm speaking to my friend and colleague, Kenny Murray. Kenny was brought up in Easter House. When Kenny was 11 years old, he and his brothers and sisters were taken into care across separate parts of Glasgow. They would not be reunited again until Kenny turned 14 years old. During his time in care, Kenny found escapism in the Harry Potter books. He identified with Harry's story, and they were the only comfort for Kenny when he learned of his grandfather's death whilst in foster care. After leaving care, Kenny pursued his passion for creative writing. He went on to study at the City of Glasgow College and then completed a degree in public relations and marketing at Queen Margaret University. Since then, Kenny has established himself as an award-winning campaigner, PR professional and aspiring screenwriter, with a particular interest in media representations of care experienced people. I first met Kenny back in 2017, and he was one of the first people to listen and understand my own experiences of care. I'm extremely thankful for the role he has had in my care journey. Kenny, thank you so much for joining me on Objects.
Thank you for having me.
So, welcome, Kenny. Can we start today by telling us a wee bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm 28 years old. I currently work for Who Cares Scotland in the public affairs team. Before that, I have worked in the private sector, in public relations. I have worked in politics. I've done a bit of journalism, but I'm also care experienced. I went into care when I was 11 years old, alongside my two brothers and my two sisters. We were taken to different parts of Glasgow throughout that care experience, and we were then reunited again when I was 14. I've spoken a lot about my care experience recently, but throughout that time I didn't think I ever would speak about my care experience.
So how does it feel to be here today talking on a podcast about your care experience?
It's quite interesting because for like a couple of reasons. I think when I was 11 and I was in care, I don't think podcasts were really about. I hadn't really heard much radio shows that were like podcasts, and I suppose what people wanted back then was to be in the papers. But what I seen in the papers about people that were in care, it was always negative. It was always, here's this children's home where people are misbehaving, here's this character on this TV show that's a murderer, here's this local politician campaigning to close this children's home. And especially my own children's home when I was in care, there was a community effort made to shut that down, and a lot of the media I seen about people that were in care was that. So the idea that we would be creating their own at that time, I don't think I could have imagined it.
So it's quite empowering for you now as a care experienced adult to be here?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you speak about your care experience, it's important because you talk about it and recognising it and sort of claiming that care identity. But I also think other people that maybe don't hear other people talking about it in a more balanced way than what they see in the media, and it allows them to connect to you. And inevitably, whenever I do speak about it on Twitter or on a blog, I get a stream of messages from people to say things like, oh, I was in care, I'm care experienced, I've experienced this as well, but I've never spoken about it. So I think the idea that this platform's going to exist is really exciting.
So the purpose of this podcast, as you'll know, is objects, three significant objects from before, during and after care. I think my first question for you would be, how was it finding your objects? What was that process like?
It was quite hard, actually, for several reasons. I'm not a naturally sort of reflective person. I don't reflect a lot in terms of looking back. I'm kind of a future focused guy, probably comes from my care experience, and rather than wanting to look back on my past, I'm looking forward to what I could do in the future, and I've not held on to a lot for that reason. But I think it's also difficult, so when I went into care, we could only take a black bag of our belongings, and I could only take a couple of books and that and some clothes. So I never took a lot into care with me, and a lot before I was in care then has been lost, actually, just because house moves, going into care, my mum having all of her struggles and her addictions and not being able to hold on to items that we had before then. So the items before care were actually quite difficult to come across. And then I think items from care, I did take some items throughout my care experience and some stuff that I held on to from before care that I had in my black bags and I took with me place to place in those black bags. But I think there's experiences that I've had where things have been lost or at times where it's been a struggle for my mum to maintain a tenancy and so things have been reclaimed by the landlord or we've not been able to hold on to them doing like a midnight flit, you know. It's the stuff that I've lost through the passage of time so that made it quite difficult to actually find stuff. And then I suppose for the aftercare object, what was difficult about that was that there's been so much positive in my life aftercare that I was actually thinking, what is significant to me? What is it significant to me because it's a significant moment in my life, or is it something that I think significant to me as a person, as an individual, and that I can reflect on? So it was actually quite hard. I scrabbled about. I was literally like in a shop this morning, like trying to buy a representation of some of the stuff that I've got because I actually just don't have it. So for me, it was like I'll bring something along that represents that because it was really important to me, but even though it was important to me, it wasn't important enough for to the people around me for me to be able to hold on to it.
Mm. So you were saying that you don't really have anything that would signify before care. So what did you decide to bring then?
So it was a toss up between two things. Three things actually. So the first thing that I thought about was a Harry Potter book. Harry Potter has always been hugely important to me. In fact, it was only reflecting on ahead of coming onto the podcast that I realised actually how significant to my care experience Harry Potter was. Because the first time I read Harry Potter, I was living with my granddad. And I didn't really see living with my granddad as being care experienced until recently, until I realised kinship care, what it was, everything that entails. Because there was no social work involvement. My mum was unwell and me, my brothers and my sisters went to live with my granddad. And I remember that Christmas I got a Harry Potter book and I hadn't really read and I was like, oh, this is then that was really important to me, but equally that was important to my care experience as well, so it was a bit of a complication. And then I think what was really important to me actually was before I went into care, there was a lot of good times, there was a lot of positive, happy sort of family memories despite all the circumstances that led to going into care. And I think there was two examples of that, which were photos. There was one of me as a baby, which is the only photo that exists of me as a child that young, because loads of different reasons in my family. And the other one was a photo of me and my brothers from when I was about 7 or 8 in around this period of time. I remember a lot of really happy memories. We'd done a lot. We had this sort of, this nuclear family almost. My dad was still about. My mum was working. My brothers and sisters and me were all living together in the one house. And we went on holidays and we played in the garden and we were all going to school. And it was all, everything you'd imagine what a normal family looks like. And for me, it's like sort of symbolic of what life was like before going into care, but in the good side.
So it sounds like you've done a lot of reflection on the good times. Did this bring up anything that wasn't so good?
So I think what's really striking is that I talk about the bad stuff quite a lot. I think I talk about my dad's addiction issues, I talk about my mum's addiction issues, I talk about the domestic abuse perpetrated upon my mum by my dad, but it's when you see the two things side by side. So when I see this photo of me and my brothers, I think that's a happy memory. I remember that photo being taken. I remember it was on a couch, I was standing behind a couch with my brother, he was taller than me, so I had to stand in a bag of nappies that were Liam's, and because even though I was the oldest, I was the shortest out of me, John Paul, and I remember that. But not long after that photo was taken, we moved to a different house. And it's the first time I remember things going on that weren't okay. I think I remember there'd been a bar across the door. And I think looking back, that stems from the fact that my dad was hiding drugs for a drug dealer. And it's only in reflecting on that that I realised that was what was happening, and hearing stories and little tidbits of information through time. And I remember seeing my dad hit my mum for the first time, actually, not long after this, and like being locked in a room so we couldn't see it. I remember trying to like sort of protect my little sisters from it. Well, my little sister, Nicola, was newborn. And John Paul and Liam, I remember trying to protect them from it. And just really try to be that protective older brother. And it wasn't as if MD had told me that's what I was to do. It was just what I was doing. And I think when you put that within a year, or maybe a year and a half of that photo being taken, that's what was going on. It was quite shocking. And actually, again, maybe another 6 months after that, my dad and my mum had a falling out related to domestic abuse. She had got my uncle to come along and throw him out of the house. But his name is on the lease with the housing. So I think maybe 2 days later, the police came to remove me, my mum, my two brothers, my two sisters. Nicola was a few months old, from the house, and we went into homeless accommodation for the first time. And I think when we talk about the happy memories, and I look at that photo as being a really happy memory, within a year and a half, 2 years of that, we were homeless, having witnessed domestic abuse, drug trafficking, you know, it's like all the different things that we would associate with the with this idea of ACEs. And I think for me, that's all it took, 2 years, and this happy memory is almost, I wouldn't say tarnished, but it's sort of bookended by there's a happy memory and then there's a sad memory again.
Sounds like you're saying the photo's quite bittersweet for you.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think actually looking at it, and it's been one of the two photos that exists of me under the age of 12. There's no other photos. In fact, one of the reasons for that is part of the domestic abuse that my dad perpetrated upon my mum was burning family photos and stuff, making her watch as he burned photos, or getting rid of them or binning them. And I think that's, I'm very lucky that she's been able to hold on to this photo, and also the photo of me as a baby. The only other photos that exist of us are of that age exist in other people's photo albums. Photos from my first communion, photos from when Nicola was born, when I was born, those all exist in other people's photo albums. We don't know where they are. And I think this sort of idea that you take your girlfriend home, or your wife home, or you can, your mum will show all the family photo albums, those just don't actually exist. And I think for a lot of people that have care experienced, that might be the case, just through the fact of their own experience. It might be, maybe nobody took photos, maybe they did, but for me, people were taking photos, but my dad was destroying them. So I'm very lucky to have these two.
Yeah. So it sounds like this is actually a really, really important picture to you then.
And do you know what? I actually wouldn't have thought it, is that? My two brothers, they get on my case all the time for just being an annoying big brother, I think, but and they annoy me equally. But I've just back from my brother's stag, so he's getting married, and I was really not looking forward to it at all. I actually thought it was just going to be a total pain in the neck. And they're just very different from me, but also very similar, which is probably why they annoy me so much. And so I don't think, as you said, what's one of the most important things in your life, that I'd go, you know, that picture of me and my brothers that really annoy me sometimes, but I actually really love. So I think being able to reflect and what we've gone through together is quite nice.
So you were rounding up your relationship with this photo and the relationship with your two brothers. What would you say the impact of this photo has had on this period of life then? We are before care.
I think it's really symbolic of this idea that, because I think when people think of people going into care, they think crack babies, or they're definitely roaming the streets, if no food, they're left in alone. And that is the case, I think, for a lot of people. But for me, I was loved I wasn't taken into care because I wasn't loved. I think the circumstances of me going into care are maybe 5 years after that photo was taken. But it's important, I think, to realise that actually, even though I hated my dad eventually because of the stuff that I'd seen him do, and I think the impact that I had on our family, we still had happy memories with him. About this time we had this photo taken, we were all living in a nice house together. I remember actually just after the photo was taken, getting the cushions from the couch and putting them on the floor and pretending the floor was lava and like jumping like over them and like him joining in on that and like my mum like sort of being there as well. And I think like that's a really nice memory that I've got. But as I say, within like a year and a half, 2 years of that, very different memories. And I think it doesn't take away from that being a happy memory, I don't think. But I think when you look at the passage of time, for me, it's important for me to understand that there's nuance in my own life.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine that there wasn't domestic abuse going on at that time. There probably was. I just wasn't seeing it or wasn't understanding it because I was young. So I don't think it was a case of a year and a half later my dad started to attack my mum. I think a year and a half later I started understanding what the shouting was and what the violence was, but equally I still had those memories in there, so I think it just shows how nuanced my experience was before here.
So you briefly touched on quite a lot of what led to you being taken into care, and that quite nicely leads us on to our next object, which is representing your time during care. So what have you brought with you?
So I've brought a copy of Harry Potter. It's not the copy of Harry Potter that I had. I'll own up to that now. And when you do share the picture, you'll see it's one of the most modern covers. But I remember I got like an edition of Harry Potter for Christmas one year. I had no idea what it was. I didn't pick it up immediately. But I was living with my granddad. So I was care experienced. I got it when I was care experienced. But I didn't realise that until I started reflecting that in the last couple of days. And when I started reading it, I loved it for loads of different reasons. I loved it just because it was so wildly different to my life, where I was sharing a bedroom with my two younger brothers, my uncle Michael, and my granddad's like spare room, sleeping on a pull-out bed. I under my covers with a torch, reading it. I think there was similarities and there was so much that was wildly different. So it was just form of escapism for me, which was really exciting, and it's something that I took with me from place to place, because I just loved reading it and rereading it and imagining what if that was my life. Oh, that would be dead exciting. Imagine going away to this world where I could do magic and
I think everybody wants that, yeah, don't they?
That's it. And it says it's escapism in its sort of purest form. It's this world that just doesn't exist, but the protagonist is around about your age. He's in somewhat similar circumstances in that he's not living with his parents, and you identify with that. And like I loved that, but also then when I went back to live with my mum after my granddad, and she was going through addiction problems. So I was almost caring for my brothers and sisters quite a lot. I was doing the cooking, I was doing the cleaning, I was going down to the post office to collect their benefits before going to school in the morning. And I remember just like one night we had a dinner that I'd managed to concoct together out of like a few pounds, which was wafer thin turkey ham and a bag of chips from the chippy between five of us. And I was just like, it's not a dinner when you look at it, but I remember eating that and feeling satisfied that I was able to feed my brothers and sisters. But then reading about the Feast at Hogwarts and like actually just using that as a form of as a way to like make myself like almost less hungry, like reading about the feasts at Hogwarts and being like, oh, that would be great, oh, custard creams and oh, treacle tart and oh.
I think it's interesting that you're laughing now, though, but it's actually like you were didn't have enough to eat, and we can look back and laugh as a coping mechanism, but it's actually really sad that you were comparing food in a book that wasn't real, it was make-believe, it was fiction, because you didn't have enough to eat.
Yeah. So as I think, it's easy to laugh when you look back on it, and I think the idea that you're reading a book to feel less hungry is like,
it's crazy.
It's actually really sad. But for me, I think it's part of my love for Harry Potter is that was the sort of similar circumstances he was in. He was eating like stale bread and cheese, I think, in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets at one point. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, well, I mean, it's a bit different from a slice of ham and a couple of chips, but for me, it was that idea of the escapism. For me, it was imagining being part of that feast as well. And I think that's like another part of that is during that time when things weren't as lovely and things weren't as neat, and we didn't have enough to eat, and I didn't understand why, and I was struggling to sort of be a carer for my brothers and sisters and my mum and go to school at the same time. I think the idea of coming home at night and sort of just reading Harry Potter again was really important to me. And I think when I went into care, it's one of the things that I managed to take with me. So I actually remembered sitting reading my Harry Potter book, and people were asking me if I wanted to go out, and I was just like, oh no, I don't know if I want to actually. Because I know people in that area, and they'll ask why I'm not living at my mum's, and I don't know how I'm going to explain that. To the signs protesting about this place, I'm like, people don't want me to go out here. And so I just stayed in my bedroom, reading Harry Potter, and looking forward to the movie coming out, because the movie was due out about that time. And I remember wondering to myself, do you get to go see films when you're in care? Because I've heard this is a Bad Boys home, so like I must have done something wrong, and I don't know if I'm going to actually get to see this. And I remember feeling sad about that, because I had no idea. And a couple of weeks later, I actually left the children's home, and I went to live with my auntie. So I packed all my stuff up in a black bag, and one of the first things I made sure that was in there was Harry Potter, and I gave that boy's comics back because I knew they must have been important to him to be able to share them with me. I was in my auntie's for a little while, and that was different because I hadn't really spent a lot of time with my auntie before that, other than at family gatherings. So they had a very normal life. She had a job, my uncle had a job, and they were season ticket holders at a football club, and they were taking me to games and things like that. And I'm just like, it was, imagine what like a normal life was like for a normal family. But I was there without my brothers and without my sisters, because they'd been taken to different parts of the city. So I think it was bittersweet. I thought that was really nice. And I didn't read Harry Potter actually as much then, because I didn't feel the need to escape. I remember feeling sad that my brothers and sisters weren't there, but I definitely put Harry Potter down for the moment and was enjoying being a child and going out looking for conquerors and playing with Pokemon cards and just things that I never had the opportunity to do before I went into care, because I was too busy caring or nurturing. And I think that's when I put that down. But
So when did you pick the book back up?
So not long after I started back school, my mum had found out I was living with my auntie, and they'd had a personal falling out over the years, so she had objected to this idea, and I was moved away, and I was taken to a foster carers in Castlemilk. And I remember I had no idea why. I thought my auntie had maybe rejected me. I didn't know why I was like being moved away, and it wasn't explained to many years later. And that's when I picked the book back up again, when I felt that need to escape once more. And I think the fact that I wasn't with my brothers and sisters at my auntie's, but I had family around me, I had people that loved me. And I think when I was taken out of foster care, I had nobody around me that knew me at all, and
I definitely must have felt the need to escape again because I dove back into Harry Potter.
And do you keep going back to Harry Potter even now as an adult? You've brought it here today. It obviously means a great deal to you. It also sounds like you had quite a few placement moves. Was this foster care the last one? And
so it depends on what you count as a placement move. So I was definitely in respite a number of times. When they went on holiday with a family, they placed me in the respite. When they needed a break from all of us children that they were looking after, they took a break and we were sent to live with respite carers. And I can't remember actually if I did take Harry Potter with me to those respite carers, but I remember just being very angry at those respite carers. I remember actually not being myself. I remember like trying to pick fights with people. I remember acting out, and I think me as an adult, I'm able to look back on that and understand why I was doing that, but I can't say that I understood why I was acting out or that anybody tried to sort of work with me on that actually. And I think what was interesting is realising actually that my granddad was my first form of care and being kinship care, because actually when my granddad died while I was in foster care, I got told by the phone, and it was only a couple of weeks ago that I realised that nobody actually even hugged me after I got told that. So that was like quite upsetting, I think, like realising that. But also at the time, like, I was distraught. Like, I got told over the phone that my granddad had died. I remember being really upset and crying. And my foster carer had been on the phone beforehand, so she must have known the news that was coming up. And she sort of like, ushered me into the hall to take the phone call. Everybody else was in the living room right next to the hall. And so they must have heard me crying. They must have heard me being upset. And then I went up to my room. And yeah, nobody came up to console me. Nobody came up to comfort me. And I think actually what comforted me was actually just picking Harry Potter up again and reading Harry Potter. I think in between crying and eating Withers Originals that I'd got the last time I went to see my granddad at Contact from him. And I remember feeling really guilty about taking them from him because he was in a hospital bed, and I was like, oh, but you'll want to enjoy his Withers Originals. And I remember like holding on to like one of those Withers Originals for ages actually, like as if it was somehow significant. But no, Harry Potter was definitely my escape then as well.
I think even that Withers Original was not, it wasn't somehow significant, it was significant for you as your last thing with your granddad. And the fact that Harry Potter was connected in that is extremely powerful, I would say, or for you. You're obviously here now in your late 20s as an adult, a successful adult.
Thanks.
what would you say the impact of Harry Potter has had on this period?
It's interesting, like, because I was using it as a form of escape, but I wasn't just reading, I was writing as well. So I remember imagining what would happen if I was in Harry Potter and writing in chapters for myself. I remember writing what I thought was going to happen next, because at this point all the books weren't released. So I remember imagining maybe what's going to happen next with Harry. Like, do him and Hermione get together? Does Voldemort come back again? Does his mum and dad somehow come back to life? I remember imagining all these different scenarios and writing my own sort of versions of these. I remember writing out these different things of, like, it was my first attempt at creative writing. I remember doing bits and bobs at school, but I just wasn't as passionate about that as this, and I think it really made me want to write for a living. And I think one of the big moments in that was, I remember going back to before care actually, when I was living with my granddad. I wrote a letter to J.K. Rowling. I remember in the back of the books they used to have letters from people, like primary school teachers, individuals that had read the books, children. And I remember thinking, oh, I want to write and I want to be in those books. I want people to see what I think about Harry Potter. And I remember writing a letter to J.K. Rowling and actually getting a reply back. And I don't know if it was her to this day, but it had a signature on it that said J.K. Rowling. It had a wee picture of Neville on it. and it was really important to me. And I remember when my gran died, actually, I ended up putting that in her coffin because she had an open casket and all the family were around visiting. And I was told, oh, you put something that's really important to you in here. And so I put that letter in. And then going back to when I was in care, I think my expressions of creativity through writing were in another form of escapism, were really important to me. And I remember wondering, oh, maybe I could put it in my granddad's coffin. But he never had a casket, so that wasn't an option. But I remember that making that connect of, well, I put this in my grand's coffin when she died, and my granddad's really important to me, so I'll do that, but not being able to. And I think throughout the years, that was what I was interested in. I remember saying to a teacher that I wanted to be an author when I grew up, or write, and sort of being laughed at and being like, oh no, people don't grow up to be authors, like, that's not something that happens here. And the idea that you could somehow use creative writing, or you could write somehow for a living, was sort of written off, and I wrote that off myself, actually. And it wasn't until I left care and I was at high school, where I was enjoying creative writing a little bit more again, that I realised I didn't have to be an author to write creatively. And I started doing a lot more writing of blogs and websites around politics, and I was expressing it through that. And then again, when I went into college and stuff, when I went to study advertising, I had this real desire to do creative advertising and write up all these adverts and these like long form advertisements or broadcast ads for big brands, because I thought, right, well, I can't be an author, so because people don't grow up to be authors, or they don't grow up to be writers, so what I want to do is use that for something that I can advance myself in life with.
So Harry Potter sounds like it's played a significant part in all aspects of your care journey.
Yeah, definitely. I think before I went into care, it was non-existent, actually, because actually it only exists when I lived with my granddad, so it actually exists from during my care experience until after my care experience, and I think it's been significant. I think actually one of the most astonishing things that happened with the idea of reflection was I was working for this large PR agency, and it was a pretty big deal, and it was really exciting, and I was employed in this graduate scheme, and they entered me for this Graduate of the Year award, and the work I was doing was great, and I was like, this is really significant, actually, the fact that I've come from a family of five that have been in care, that have grown up in poverty, that have grown up in the east end of Glasgow, where people don't expect a lot from people. And I've graduated, and I thought, I really need to reflect on this. I really need to actually let other people know that this is big. Just being nominated, actually. And I wrote this blog about my life, and I called it Life Lessons I Learned from Being Homeless. And so I never really spoke about my care experience, but actually throughout my life, even after care, when I went back to live with my mum, we experienced homelessness several times. There was no social work involvement at that point. And for me, that was the framing of my life. Like, I didn't understand care experience or my identity as a care experience person back then. I understood it as someone that was working class, that was in poverty, that had grown up in the east end of Glasgow and had experienced homelessness. And so I wrote this blog, and I shared it, and J.K. Rowling seen it and shared it and said it was inspiring, and I had a back and forth, and I was like, oh, you're my hero, you know, that really cringe-worthy like fan moment, and she responded back, no, like, you're my hero. And I was just like, it was really nice. And for me, it's like connecting again, writing that letter and putting that in my gran's coffin, the response, doing my creative writing, and wanting to put that in my granddad's coffin, and then writing this blog and sort of J.K. Rowling recognising it. It's like, throughout different stages of my life, Harry Potter's been instrumental in interactions with that, whether it's reading the book, writing about the book, talking about my experience through the writing and literacy skills that I've learned from the book, I think it's had a massive impact on my life.
So you briefly spoke about college and graduation, and I think we could ask you what your third object is.
So it's my order of precedence from my college graduation, and I think I really struggled actually to pick something for aftercare because I've had so many nice things. I had my job offer letter from my first public relations job. I had my graduation certificate. I had photos of my graduation. So there was different things that I could have picked from, but actually the order of precedence was quite nice because I actually wasn't going to go to my graduation. I was going to miss it because I never had enough money to buy the gowns or to attend the drinks and stuff afterwards. And like, I loved college, I was working all throughout it, but I'd just lost my job. Before that, I was working with an MSP, and the election had happened, and she never won her seat again. And so I was in between jobs, and so I didn't have a lot of money, and I was actually financially supporting my mum quite a lot this time, and she didn't have quite a lot of money to be able to pay for these gowns. So just through sheer circumstance of poverty, I wasn't going to be able to attend my graduation. And I got a letter through that said I was awarded student of the department because of my achievement throughout the course over 2 years. And I remember thinking, that's great, but I'm not even going to be able to accept that. And so I wrote a letter to the head of the course, John Houston, and I said, I can't come, thanks for this, this is really nice. I won't be there though, because I don't have the money to pay for this. And I think he paid for it himself actually, because he just like, come along and we'll sort you out. And I remember being able to have a drink afterwards, and I remember having a gown, and he was the one that sorted that actually. And I've still got a relationship with him to this day in terms of staying in touch. I've been back into the college to speak to people. I'm involved in projects that he's working on, and I think it's an example of someone going out their way to help where I maybe never had anybody. And I think my own family circumstances meant that that wasn't something I could do, but the fact that I even got to the graduation was important because of everything I'd been through. But then the fact that I was able to attend, I think, was actually thanks to someone else just sticking their neck above the parapet and being like, I'd really like to help you.
It sounds like this was quite a pivotal moment in your life then.
I think it was, because growing up in Care, I remember studying really hard, actually, because I had this fear, and my friend Callum talks about this quite a lot, this fear that I had about being like everybody else that isn't being supported, because I don't think I was supported. I think I was supported by individuals. I was supported by my history teacher, Mrs. Girasoli. I was supported by my college lecturer, John Houston. Like, it was individuals that supported me. It wasn't the system. And I think I remember having this fear of not achieving. And achievement to me was many different things. It was, I want to be rich. I want to have this amazing job. I want to have this really lovely house. And I remember all the different iterations of what I thought success was. But actually, success was actually being able to attend college, of graduating, of doing well, being recognised as student of the department. All the things that statistics would tell you that I wouldn't amount to be. And I think that was in spite of the system that I achieved that. And I think that's why it was really pivotal for me, because I could have gone any other way. People that I was in care with have gone different directions in their life. Prison, homelessness, and I think unemployment, you know, I could definitely have gone down any of those roads. You know, it's a sort of sense of there, but for the grace of God, go I. And I think it was individuals that helped me realise my potential.
And with those individuals that helped you realise your potential, how did that impact you to where you are now?
My first ever time trying to reflect on something, like, in terms of my life, was we were given this task in college, and it was like advertise yourself. Like, how would you advertise yourself? And I was like, how do I advertise myself? Because that, like, I mean, what do I have to offer? Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't consider myself like an actually good looking guy. I didn't consider myself particularly talented at other skills like football or music or different things that people would associate with that. And I was just like, well, I'm really creative. And so I remember sitting down with John, and he's like, what's your unique selling point? What makes you unique? And I thought, I've actually experienced quite a lot in my life. I've been through care, I've been through homelessness, I've witnessed domestic violence, and all of the different areas of my life that were a struggle. And I think I was quite unique in my course, because everybody else, when speaking about their family life, was entirely different from mine. And I think being able to make it through all of that was a selling point, because I brought with me resilience, I brought with me a forward-facing, future-focused person that could make it through things when things got tough. Like, that's when I really got going, because things for me were always tough. And I think, I mean, it's definitely not helped my understanding of deadlines or anything like that, because I definitely leave things to the last minute. I'm like, wait till it gets really tough. And I've got a day left to submit this essay that's 6,000 words. And so I think that idea of thinking of my own unique selling point was really important. And as I say, when I went on to graduate, that's how I looked at it. That's what made me different from the people in the industry that had connections through family or family friends or their own different areas of after school activities and stuff, you know. I was unique in that I had resilience from trauma that I'd gone through, and I would make sure the job got done. And I think that was how I sold myself from then on, which was really significant in getting into jobs and advancing my career.
So you've advanced your career now, haven't you? You're in Who Cares Scotland from your college to now. How do you summarise that? How did that all happen for you?
I've actually felt a bit like of a, like an odd, like ugly duckling in my career. I remember working in the SNP and being involved in politics, but here and there, and not really feeling like I fit in, you know, like, not because of the behaviour of others, but because I couldn't see many people like me. And I remember then going on to get a job with the Chartered Institute of Public Relations, and I went to a jobs fair where I was to promote the career of public relations to young people, and all the sort of kids from different schools all over Glasgow came. And I remember the schools, the private schools, where people are like, oh, my aunt works for Google, my uncle does public relations for this company. And thinking, all right, well, you really know about the successes you can have in PR, and really selling it. And then I remember the kids coming from the school that I attended, and they were like, what's this? And me having to explain it, and them not really understanding it. And then having their heads turned by like the loud tank display by the army at the other side of the hall, and rushing off to that. And I remember thinking, I stand out here as well. And then when I went for my job interview at Weber Shandwick, which is one of the world's largest PR agencies, it's one of the ones, but when you're at college or university, people are like, oh, this is one of the top five. And it's like a huge achievement to get a job in them. I remember going for the interview and being really nervous and like not expecting to get anywhere, and to my surprise that the guy interviewed me had actually attended the same school as I had, so it was the first time that I'd recognised a peer in the industry that I'd been sort of trying to navigate through, and him talking to me about what the industry was like, what to expect, and it was one of the easiest interviews I've ever had, and whether there was some sort of nepotism there, I don't know, but I remember I was one of four people to be interviewed. This guy had went to the same school as me 20 years apart, and had spoke about since then about aspects of his life that I thought were quite similar to mine. And I remember that was the first time that I really recognised that, But once he left, again, I felt like I stood out. And I feel that that's something that's sort of carried through me throughout my career. And it's not something that other people are doing. It's in me. It's my own self-doubt. It's my own feeling of imposter syndrome, where I'm working for this agency. I've won these awards for these large brands. Or, like, I remember working on a campaign for the NHS and it winning loads of awards and not feeling that I should have gone to the awards presentation, because it wasn't just me, it was other people, and sort of really doubted my own input on that. So I think, for me, until I actually got to Who Cares Scotland, I don't think I've ever really fit in. Because when I talk about my life at Who Cares Scotland, or when I talk about what I've experienced or what I've gone through, I don't do it every day, but when I do it, people aren't looking at you and feeling sorry for you. They're looking at you and feeling familiarity, and because of that, you feel that. And I think I've been really able to excel and love what I do, and like I love coming into my job every day. Like, it's cliche, but like I genuinely like look forward to coming in and just getting on with my work. And I think knowing that I'm using the things that I've learned from this industry, from this college course, from reading Harry Potter, all this different stuff, I mean, I'm putting it forward to helping the world understand who Care Experience people are and what responsibility they've got to give us a better future. I think that's what feels really special. And actually, within Who Cares Scotland, I've managed to round up the Harry Potter thing into a hook, line and sinker thing, whereby I took Harry Potter forward in the media club that I started alongside my friend Sarah at Who Cares Scotland, and we took it to Bute House to read it with the First Minister. And the idea of that was to talk about how important Harry Potter was to people that are care experienced, how familiar all of us were with it. It wasn't just me that was familiar with it, there was a whole group of people that had all these same experiences as I had, and had interpreted it in their own way, but felt that connection because of their care experience, because of Harry's care experience. And I remember sitting down and talking about that with the First Minister. That was great. And then coming out of that, and J.K. Rowling seeing that the First Minister had hosted this and giving a sort of shout out to Who Cares Scotland, talking about how she understands the value that the book has to care experienced people. And then giving me a wee shout out as well, which was nice. But I think what was really good was that knowing that the author of this book that was so important to my life was able to connect care experience with it because of the role that I'd found myself in was important, you know. And I think actually, again, it's an individual that's important in that. I wouldn't have got the job unless my manager, Jamie, had found me on Twitter. I was sort of hawking myself on Twitter looking for a job, but I remember being like, I'm looking for a job, is anybody hiring? And I got lots of job offers, and it was really exciting because for me it was a pivotal moment for me in understanding how I valued myself. There was jobs that offered more money, there was jobs that offered prestige in terms of who it was for, where you could go, the things you could do. But the one that really struck out as being different to me was Who Cares Scotland, and I wasn't going to go for it until I went for a wee coffee with Jamie, and he explained to me all the things that were happening to people in care today and all the things they were experiencing, and making the connection that actually wasn't any different to when I was in care 15 years ago. I was like, things haven't moved on in 15 years. Something needs to change. And I think maybe it's this, my own sense of ego, where I was like, well, maybe I can be one of the difference makers in this, actually. And yeah, if it wasn't for Jamie convincing me almost to take that job, I'd probably be still in the private sector, like selling ideas to people for money, and wouldn't probably actually have looked back in my care experience at all. So it's actually been really pivotal in terms of my career, but also in my own personal reflections. I don't think I've ever spoken about being in care as much as I have over the last 2 years. And it's not like it's part of the job. It's not like there's a wee bit in the description of the job title that's like, you must talk about being in care, but you actually feel compelled to, because other people are talking about their life and the similarities that I've got with them, and it feels like we're on this sort of crest of a wave, you know, of change. And I think, if not now, when? Like, and so I'm really excited, actually, that my whole life has brought me to where I am just now. I just won an award recently for the campaign around the Media Club, and the recognition that that's received from people for what we look to do is actually address how care experience people are portrayed in the media. And for me, it goes back to when I was in care and reading those articles about people in children's homes, or seeing those characters in TV shows, the murderers, and being able to say, like, that definitely made me think badly about myself at the time, and that's still going on, and I wanted to help change that. And this idea of writing a letter to the author, I was like, why don't we actually all just get together, read the book, and then if we don't think the author's got this right, we'll let them know. But if we think they do, we'll really champion them. And that campaign actually won an award, and I gave a speech at that, and it was actually one of the first times that I'd spoken publicly to, like, such a large audience about being in care, and I was so nervous, actually. And I think even there I had a sort of sense of imposter syndrome, where I was just like, why am I here? What has brought me here? What, like, who says this is mine? And I think, actually, that idea of what is your unique selling point? What makes you unique? And it was the fact that I had care experience and I was connecting people with creators of media to let them know what they thought, and nobody else was making that connection in the way that I was. And I think, actually, if that's when I stopped, I was like, this is a unique selling point, and I valued myself again.
So it sounds like winning this award, being working at Who Cares Scotland, from this wee blonde boy that I'm looking at in the photo, you've gone on quite a big journey. Is there anything that you wish you had at any point in this journey?
That's actually quite difficult, because I'm like, there is so much that I wish I had. I wish I had all those stories that I'd written. And, like, just to see what they were like, what was my escapism? What was those extra chapters that I was writing? Like, what was this character of Kenny in the world of Harry Potter? What was he like? What did I see myself as? And I don't have that, and I think it would be really good to have that. Just as a sort of way to reflect, you know, this idea of letters to your younger self. And it's almost a way of going back and looking at that, and I don't have that, and actually makes me quite sad. I think it'd be really good to be able to go back and look at that. And I actually remember a colleague at an event I was at. She had a story that she had written when she was younger, and she was talking about how important that was to her. And I remember thinking, that's really nice, because I wrote stories and, like, they were really important to me, but I didn't have them to bring with me. So I think the idea that I could have carried that with me would have been nice. But then there's also the other part of me, that where I constantly ask myself, what is success? Where I'm like, imagine I told one of those Harry Potter books. Those would have been worth a fortune.
Priorities. So we've explored your entire care journey from start to finish. You've bared your soul on this podcast. I guess my final question would be, what would you say to others who have listened to this podcast and may be interested in coming on and doing what you've just done? Other care experience people?
I think it's something that people should want to do, because I wouldn't see myself as attaching moments of my life to objects, necessarily. It's not something where I'd be like, oh, well, this object definitely represents that time, and I've not held on to a lot just because of my circumstances. But by having to look for objects, I'm like, what is that object before care that I really value? What is the object during care that I really valued? And what is the object after care that I really value? Because they all have a significant impact. Like, care doesn't leave you, like, you're care experienced for life, and I think forcing myself to reflect on things through the prism of objects has actually been really helpful, because looking at the photo, where I'm like, that was really nice, but then remembering not long after it, like, my dad was beating my mum up in front of me, and then he forced the police to come and take us out of the house, and we were homeless, and everything that came after that, and then the struggles that my mum went on to, like, that I think this photo is a symbol of the time before, that catalyst of sort of decay in my family, where my family just sort of really struggled and led to the point I was in care. I think Harry Potter, realising, like, I do understand that it's important to my life, but actually talking about it, realising that it's actually touching lots of different areas, and only just realising that my first interaction with Harry Potter was actually when I was care experienced and living with my granddad. That was a new revelation, and I'm having these quite a lot the more I talk about my life, where I remember something that I've definitely just, like, sort of hidden away, was important, and then scrabbling about last night and this morning being like, what can I bring for aftercare, and actually remembering that somebody went out of their way one time to get me gowns for my graduation and allow me to be just like everybody else, and that's what set me on the road that I'm on. I think I wouldn't have thought of that necessarily, but coming across it and thinking about it and reflecting on it was really important, because I could have brought loads of things that symbolised moments in my life, but having to pick three really makes you think about your life at these moments and how they've shaped you and why things are important to you. So yeah, it's definitely been an experience going through my care journey.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your objects. It's been a real pleasure to sit and listen.
Thanks for having me. It's actually been really good to talk about it, and I'm really excited to see what people think about the objects that I've shared and what they think about the stories that are attached to them.